Many people consider their cars works of art, particularly those who lovingly restore old cars from early and mid-20th century. On today's Central Standard, we explore the art of the car and the art of colliding cars. I'm Gina Kaufman. More about the colliding cars in a minute. This weekend, classic car enthusiasts will be gathering at the Kansas City Art Institute for an annual celebration of curvaceous cars painted vibrant colors from the early and mid-20th century. It just so happens that this year, the Art Institute's interim president knows a thing or two about car design. Good morning, Tony Jones.
Good morning.
Tell me about your background with cars. Some people might not think that an art guy would also be a car guy.
I'm rather like Bob Lutz, who was the CEO of General Motors, who said, we don't make cars, we make rolling sculpture.
Rolling sculpture.
I thought, that's a wonderful thing. And I was trained as a sculptor. But we come from a car family. We're car guys. We have car guys in the UK as well, you know. And my brother is fanatic about cars and took up competitive motorcycle racing at the age of 75. So we are gearheads, as you may say. So I don't see the difference between cars and sculpture. I see they all go together. They're all made by craftspersons who love what they do. Mack does exactly the same thing. He's building these extraordinary demolition derby cars. We're going to see all sorts of things up there on the lawn at Kansas City Art Institute that I think all qualify as being works of art. And that's why this is called the art of the car.
Well, Tony just mentioned Mack. He's talking about Mack McClanahan. Mack is an artist, and for him, cars are materials. He takes them apart, puts them back together, and crashes them in the demolition derby. Hi, Mack.
Good morning.
So I want to talk to you very shortly about what you do and why you do it, but what do you think about this idea of cars as rolling sculpture?
It varies. I mean, there's good ones and there's bad ones. There's some cars that I wouldn't, like what's going on now in the car industry and everything's punched, it looks the same and their boxes, I don't care for whatsoever.
So you think of that as perhaps bad sculpture, or just you can't even dignify it with the word sculpture?
Maybe it's just a form of taste. I don't know. Or preferences. Not to say that some people shouldn't like, that's just my preference.
Well, Mack, we're going to get back to you and more about your story shortly. But Tony, this year's Art of the Car Concourse is focused on something that's being referred to as dream cars. Explain what that means.
Well, I think that's right. They're dreams on wheels. Every car manufacturer has a kind of fantasy laboratory where they dream up all sorts of things that stretch the nature of scale, the nature of design, use of materials, etc. These are called concept cars. And this year, the theme of the Art of the Car, which will have about 200 vehicles, the central theme is concept cars. These are literally one-offs, handmade cars by craftspersons at GM or Ford or Chrysler. They never actually hit the road. Sometimes they were so
outlandish. Why are they built?
Well, they're so outlandish. They're stretching concepts. They're stretching ideas of materials, etc., and design. Some of them might approach being an actual production model. They might go from the Detroit Motor Show. If thousands of people come in and say, oh, I really would buy that if it actually was on the road, they'll tweak it and change it and make it more marketable and make it cheaper to produce, and they'll put it out on the highway for you. But other things just completely disappeared. So these are incredibly expensive, one-off handmade vehicles. And they, you call them dreams on wheels. They are fantasies, and we have an amazing collection of these that have been found from all over the country and brought to Kansas City, to the Kansas City Art Institute.
Dating back how far?
They go back to the 1940s and 50s, and they come right up to date. I mean, there is a concept car that you can't yet drive, but which is brand new. It's called the i8. It's made by BMW. It's their concept car, and perhaps if everybody likes it enough, in 2, 3, 4 years, you may actually be able to buy one.
And so this is something that car companies still do today, but have been doing for a long, long time?
They do. I had the most amazing experience some years ago going to visit Jaguar in Birmingham, and I actually sat in the XK Roadster, which was made of clay.
Made of clay? Why?
They make mock-ups in clay so that they can change them, widen that fender, you know, shift that line, move that wing, move the bonnet of the car, the boot of the car, move things around. So they do it in clay so they can do that. But then into it, they'll insert a real interior with real seats. I sat in there in a leather upholstery interior while the rest of the car was made out of clay.
This is interesting because I feel like when you talk about the concept car, you're talking about a single, unique, original object, which I think is an idea that is very intuitive for most people to connect with art. But when it comes to car design, like what Mac was describing, perhaps not just mass-produced, but mass-produced maybe quickly with a little less intention, where's the art there? I mean, is there a whole range?
Well, I think it is a range. It's looking at sculpture. I mean, you look at the contemporary Cadillacs, for example. They're very hard-edged. They look like origami. But other cars look like they are just balloon-like shapes. And that is because designers are playing with new materials. What if you could make a car out of carbon fiber? What if you could... here's a provocative idea. What if you could grow a car? There are actually experiments going on about growing chassis of cars using stem cell technology from animals. And you would grow the chassis out of cartilage from a cow or possibly a shark. Cartilage is very strong, very bendy, and it will heal itself. Well, we're moving now out of sheet metal into living organisms. And designers are playing with those kinds of ideas and materials, constantly testing them out. That's why these experimental concept cars, these dreams on wheels, are so fascinating, so expensive, so rare, is that they are really on the outer edge of where design is going.
What is one of your favorite concept cars that'll be here this weekend?
Well, I'm astonished by this thing. I'm not quite sure what I would describe. This is sort of a bus designed by GM in 1950, truly a dream vehicle called the Future Liner. It's an absolutely extraordinary object. There were, I think, about 10 of these. This is one of the few that's actually rolling and running, and it's going to be in the show. And it's one of those things where, let me put it this way, Gina, 200 vehicles, but I guarantee 175 oh my God moments. You're going to walk up to some of these things and say, oh my God, somebody actually designed that. I would never have bought that. But on the other hand, you could look at some things and say, this is just one iteration away from what my father drove.
That's funny. Yeah. The cars that people will see this weekend primarily outside of, I mean, is the concept car part a special event that's part of the larger event?
That's exactly right.
So in the larger event, I mean, people will be really focused on older cars, classic cars, vintage cars that have been lovingly maintained, lovingly restored. I look at these kinds of cars and see such a different look from what you see in cars today. There's something almost romantic about all these old cars, and sitting in them, it's a different feel too. Has the artistry of car design changed in a trajectory that you can really describe, or do we just romanticize things that are less commonplace in our own time?
That's a really good point. I think in the past, cars were done to people. Today, cars are done for people. There's a lot more study about the ergonomics of human beings and how you fit into a car and how it fits around you. It's a lot more social tuning, a lot more design consciousness.
In today's cars?
In today's cars than we would ever have seen before.
Then why do I think old cars look so cool?
Well, they are cool, and they look cool, and they use color ranges that we don't use anymore, and we use styles of design that we don't use anymore. And you're right, there is a romantic, nostalgic kind of feeling about this. Many people who will come to this will say, that's the car that my grandmother drove, or that's the car that my father drove. There's a nostalgia about it because all those cars are cultural objects. Just like the art of the time, they're the cars of the time. You can't mistake a 1950s American car from something that's on the road today.
I grew up in the 1980s, and I am still waiting to feel nostalgic about 80s cars. Do you think that there is a time period when that we refer to when we refer to classic and vintage cars that some people do see as like a golden era?
I think it depends on your age, but you're right. The golden era of American car designs, Auburns and magnificent Duesenbergs, for example, all these wonderful cars, they are from a different world. But the ones that are sort of just out of touch are the ones that I think I love the most. I'm a child of the 50s, so being brought up in the UK, I'm watching American movies and seeing what Americans drove, you know, those enormous Mercuries, seeing that those cars to me are their nostalgia, although it's not part of my background. I just love what they look like. I love the people who were dressed up as movie stars in the film noir, the gangster movies of the American 30s, 40s, and 50s. Those cars were not just part of the story. They were critical. They were embedded in the story. So I like looking back at those and thinking, God, you know, what would it have been like to be a Beach Boy?
What would it have been like to be a Beach Boy? I ask myself that a lot. Talk to me about the people who restore and maintain and love old cars. We're going to see a lot of them this weekend. And there's a really passionate subculture out there.
There is. And if you went to the Nelson Atkins Museum today and you went into the laboratories where people are conserving great paintings, great works of art, they have that same passion. We're looking at, applied art. A magnificent, beautiful vehicle that's rusted and beaten up, etc. But it's an art object telling us about the period in which it was made. And people restore these. People have incredible technical ability to go back into the history of those vehicles, remanufacture the pieces that are missing, and bring some rusting hulk out of a miserable barn where it's been lying for years and years, somewhere in Missouri where it's been forgotten.
And in Missouri, it would be a little bit rusty, probably.
but they bring it back to life. The rust goes away, and suddenly there's this magnificent creation, and you have another one of those, oh my God, moments. They actually saved that car.
So what would you say motivates this subculture?
I think it's a love of the objects, the craftsmanship, a respect for the men and women of the past who actually built those cars. Yeah.
Tony Jones, hang with me for a second. I want to bring Mac McClanahan, who we heard from for a moment earlier, really into this conversation. And Mac, you work with cars not for the purpose of restoring or preserving a pristine condition, but in fact to eventually crash them. Tell me about that.
Well, I first started this by accident. I went to a demolition derby out with a bunch of friends in Tonganoxie, in the late 90s. And there was a raffle to drive a derby car there, and I just went crazy. I think I spent $100, and I didn't get the derby car. But it lit the fire in me to compete. I used to be a motocrosser in my teens, late teens, early 20s, and quit because of an accident. And it really lit that fire of competition and driving. Yet what a spectacle derby is. It's all these folk art cars, some people doing the best they can to make a car, some people just taking out the windows and going to happy to just run into somebody a couple of times and be done with it.
Let's, before we get too far, make sure our listeners know what the demolition derby is. Tell us about the derby, assuming we know nothing.
Demolition derby is usually, it can be any number of cars. It's been as small as five that I've been at to as many as 25 in a heat. There's usually two heats with a feature event where the winner is picked out by the last running car.
And what are they trying to do? I mean, who's there and what actually is happening?
Well, it's actually a bit of a crazy chess game where the people that are really good, there's a bunch of boys out at Platte City that I totally admire that kind of took me under their wing and started tutoring me and taught me more of the nuances of demolition derby, how to go tuck in a corner, how to different hammer moves, when to go, when not to go.
So these are cars crashing into each other, and what you want is your car to still be running when no one else's is, when the others are just destroyed.
Exactly.
But still running might not be like still looking good.
Well, no, that's what's amazing about these cars. Sometimes it looks like they're a banana and still running, and sometimes on three tires, sometimes on one axle. That's what's amazing about, and no water. Sometimes these cars will run 10 minutes with no water.
How do you explain it? I mean, it sounds like you hand yourself over to sort of like chance on some level.
Well, there is, but there's I've learned over the years that the guys that are really good are strategists. There's usually people working together. Which kind of disenchanted me a little bit with it.
It disenchanted you? What do you like about the Derby? And what gave you the idea to create art cars for the Derby?
Well, what I like the aspect of transformation, that this car was once somebody's family car, and then it ended up somewhere, you know, in the weeds, and somebody said, oh, I can make that car can have one more life. And it actually is in a big show where thousands of people can be watching it perform.
What does it take to get the car from this state where it's maybe buried under weeds or in a ditch or something into a state where it can run in the Derby, but also in your case, where it looks like something magnificent?
Well, I built a car, which is crazy. 2 years ago, I had a sponsor and I spent $8,000.
What did you do?
For a demolition derby car.
Just like, what was the process of transforming it?
Well, there's some things we just don't talk about.
Oh,
but,
really?
Which I enjoy about the derby.
For competition's sake.
Yeah, and it's legal ways to strengthen the car where it makes it more competitive. And there's things like engines, rear ends, being able to weld, different things like cooling systems that you can run. I mean, I spend a lot of money on running different cooling systems.
Are the aesthetics of the car important to you?
They are to me. I do the best. I'm not a mechanic. I'm a terrible mechanic. That's what ruined my motorcycle career. I came off a jump after adding a fork kit to the front end and shot both fork tubes off with the front wheel and landed in the dirt with no front wheel. So I'm not a very good mechanic. But as an artist, I try to do the best I can to create this folk kind of object with other artists that I've involved. Like Peregrine Honing has created this. My world's fastest demolition derby art car has one of her beautiful paintings on the hood.
How do you get other artists to participate in this thing? I mean, that you have kind of accepted that at some point this thing is going to be smashed into a shape that is not what you intended. That's your vision. Is it a hard sell with other artists, or are people just totally excited about this?
Well, no, the transformation of the car is almost like a freeing of the soul of the car. I mean, that's kind of a crazy thing for me to say, but like an Indian pot that has a hole in the bottom, American Indian pot that has a hole in it, how that lets the soul free, or the Indian artists who do the sand paintings and do the absolute best job they can, which is what I try to do with the cars, and make it as desirable aesthetically to me as I can, and then let it go. And what I want it to be is in some kind of shape that I would have never dreamed of.
When you put these cars in the Derby, do you drive them?
Yes, and I've had other people in my teams drive them also.
What's it like to drive these cars and to get onto into a situation where you are trying to be in an accident? I mean, I guess it's not an accident when you're trying. You're trying to be in a collision.
Well, you're avoiding people. At the same time, you're trying to take somebody else out. I've been in a car for 5 minutes, or I've been in a car for 35 minutes, and I couldn't tell you the difference. It's totally consuming, which I love about it. There's nothing else in the world that's going on. And I don't know, there's not too many experiences I've had where I have that experience.
You once referred to the Derby as abstract chaos.
Yes. And then you make sense, and you just go, there's a flow with it. And you learn the rhythm, you look at certain cars to see what that rhythm is. and try to get into the flow of what's going on.
Who are the other people at the Derby? Have you become friends with them?
Yeah, there were two brothers. It's really crazy. The first Derby I went to that I liked so much, there was these brothers called the Smith Brothers. And they were great. They went out and they had great cars. They went out and performed great. I mean, hit hard and took other cars out with like really good shots to the wheels, to the radiators, which is the best way to take out a car and not damage your own car. And as it turned out, their shop was like five blocks from where I stay at Wenzel Steelworks.
And that's where you have a day job.
No, Bill is probably the most patient man on earth. I call him Saint Wenzel. He's been my patron for over 15 years, allows me to keep things there and work there and build these cars.
So that brings up the point that cars are actually more material to you than like a kind of a goal in and of themselves in some way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'll go to most cars, I look at them and see what I can do with it. You'd mentioned a Jaguar. I've got an 88 Jaguar that has a 350 in it and automatic tranny, but I'm converting it. I'm going to do the entire car with aluminum wrenches, which won't be a Derby car, but will be. I'm going to try some kind of Texas road race with it.
When you say you're going to do the entire car with aluminum wrenches, what do you mean?
I'm casting. I've got one more set to do. I've got almost 2,000 aluminum wrenches that I've cast that from steel wrenches that vary from sizes from 3 feet to 3 inches. There's seven different wrenches. I'll heat them up in a electric kiln and make them where they'll bend to the car. I'll use the car itself as a mold. I'll weld those aluminum wrenches together. Then we'll pull the aluminum wrenches off and clear fiberglass the back of those voids where the wrenches don't cover, pull the steel body off, put those back on, and I'm putting lights inside the car so when the car goes, you know, more intense, less intense, the lights, depending on how fast it's going.
Tony Jones looks delighted. Tony, why are you delighted by this?
Well, this is a craftsman. Mark is talking about an artistic process. It's fascinating. He's going to go through all this effort, knowing perfectly well that 2 seconds into the race, some large, horrible car is going to crash into him and destroy his wrench's car. But, you know, that's the passion that you have. You really love doing this. And it's, perhaps Mark is obsessive. The people I know who do this work, they are obsessed with doing this because they absolutely love this process.
Well, this is interesting to me because I have known people who work on old cars to restore them, to keep them perfect, to find the original part and all of that. And Mac, you're talking about covering something with wrenches, removing steel bodies. It sounds like the opposite. Do you think it's the opposite? Like, do you think you do the opposite of what old car rehabbers do?
Well, let me go back just a little bit. When what people don't realize when they're in the Derby and they hit my car, they're making art. Because that is becoming, the reasons why I do these cars, when I got a little bit, I wasn't real happy with Demolition Derby for a while. And I decided, well, I still want to keep the car. What am I going to do? So I'm going to make art cars. How do I really make this an art car? So I took it to Houston, to the Houston Art Car Parade, where I was accepted into the parade. So therefore, I was an art car. And there was no denying, hey, you're a Demolition Derby car. No, I'm an art car. And then I started taking it to different events. I was the world's fastest art car for, I think, around 6 years, till we were beaten about 2 years ago. And taking that car to different events and making that into a sculpture, and the final through the experience of that car, and then the conclusion of that will be when it goes into a Derby and people make it and shape it into the final sculpture.
If you were going to look for meaning in all of this, in a cultural phenomenon of crashing cars on purpose, what would it be? Beyond the question of why you do this as an artist, why do you think our culture does this?
Other than my own experience, I'm not really sure. I mean, it's not really a release for me. I don't I don't go, but I have to admit I like dents. I since I've been in the Derby, I prefer a dented car to a straight car. But then on the other hand, I'm somewhere in between shiny paint and rust. I appreciate both a great deal. Yet I don't want my I'm not a big fan of the totally rust rat rod.
Tony Jones, Interim Art Institute President and Car Enthusiast, thanks for being here today. Have fun at the Art of the Car this weekend.
Thank you, Gina.
And Mac McClanahan, when's your next Derby?
I'm presently working on a studio. It's going to take me a while to do that, but I'm going to see the show this weekend.